Hi, everybody. I'm Sherman, and I'm an alcoholic. By the grace of the God of my understanding in this fellowship, I'm sober another day. And it is one day at a time. It truly is. So, what we're supposed to do here is what it was it like and what happened and what it's like now. And I drank the fun out of it. I really did drink the fun out of my life. I really did. And I had a good time for a long time too. And then all of a sudden it just ran over me. And I am so grateful for this fellowship because it is a design for living that truly, truly does work. The only thing is you've got to work it. You have to work it. And so as a result, I can start way back when I have the disease of more. I do. If I start to have a little drink or two, I mean, it's Nelly barred the door. I think of, I can mention a name because he's gone now, but Bill L. used to say, "Well, one drink. What's a drink?" He said. And he said, "Yep, for me, a case of beer and a fifth of Corbel. That was a drink." And that's pretty much the way that goes, too, you know. So, well, anyway, I was born on a farm. Now, no kidding. And I was 12 years old before we even had electricity. So, that goes back a ways. But anyway, the whole thing, you know, when you really evaluate your life, it becomes, sometimes it's a little complicated and sometimes it's not so bad, but it's pretty hard to look at yourself sometimes. And I don't know about anybody else, but one day I woke up and I said, "Oh my God, it's me. It isn't anybody else." I was done pointing fingers. I couldn't do it anymore. So I had to take responsibility for myself. And by the grace of God, I say this, by the grace of God, but the real truth of the matter is I got that gift of desperation. And I hope each and every one of you have gotten this. A gift of desperation. Now that stands for God too, doesn't it? Yeah. And you know, it's kind of cool that that happened. But in the same token, I got so sick and tired of being sick and tired, it wasn't even funny. I couldn't quit drinking. I couldn't stop. I tried. I don't know how many times I quit drinking. Jesus Christmas! I stopped hundreds of times, you know, but it didn't seem to work. You know, I didn't have a clue. So, by the grace of God and that wonderful wife of mine, you know, one night I drank and I drank and I drank and I drank and I couldn't pass out and whatever. The next morning she said, "We got to do something," and I was willing to go and I went for screening and whatever. And you know, it was pretty cool when I looked back at it because I didn't know what to do. I had called my kids and I called my sister and just raised hell, you know. And then finally I passed out, I guess. But in the same token, the next morning, that's what she said, and I am so grateful for that because we started to do something. We went for a screening. And, you know, how many of you here have taken that test that's in the Parade magazine and all that? You know, "Oh, I'm not that bad. I'm not that bad." And I passed every one of them. And I took a lot of them. I did, because I was concerned that my drinking was out of hand. So, anyway, that particular day, I just answered the questions as they came up, and I was honest. And they wanted to keep me there. You know, they said, "Well, you know," and I backed up against the wall. I said, "No, I'm not that bad," you know, and all that stuff. And they went to her then, and this is my lovely, and they said, well, you know, if he gets really bad, just call an ambulance, you know, and whatever. So we left there. I got out of the car, and I walked right down to the Stamm house. Walked right in there, and I went up and give me an old-fashioned sweep. You know, I'm going to show these SOBs that, you know. And that was the first time as I recall, the first time the God of my understanding said something to me. Because I finished that drink, and I'm sitting there thinking, well, might just well order another one, you know. And something in the back of my mind said, you got to stop. Now I know it was the good Lord speaking to me, but I didn't know it at the time. But I paid attention, and I went back up and detoxed at home and whatever. It's no fun, but hey, we went through it and lived through it. And she had a black lab, and we'd go out to Fesky Park, and I'd take him down the slide and stuff, you know. But she kept me busy all the time because I needed that. I had to have something to do, you know. So anyway, the reason I got into treatment, though, I have to be honest here, I didn't dare go back. I took a leave of absence, and I went down to the farm, and I got involved in the farm a little bit. And there was a Father's Day deal coming up. And the kids didn't really invite me. You know, they didn't really, you know. And Jesus, I got mad, you know. Whew. Them inconsiderate SOBs, you know. So I stormed out of there and proceeded to just finish off my drinking career. But really, that's actually what happened. And then I detoxed at home, but then I didn't dare go back to work because I knew if I went back to work, I was going to be in trouble. I just knew it. And so I decided I'd go to APAC. And that was a blessing, too. We both cried, you know, and I got out of the car, and she's bawling, and I'm bawling, and the whole thing, you know, life's over, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And little did we know it was the beginning of life. It was not the end of our drinking. It was the end of our drinking career, but it was just the beginning of what life truly is all about. And that's what we've done, you know, is worked on that. So, but anyway, at APEC, I always bring this up because it's so true. The first meeting I went to, there was a fella sitting across from me, and when it got to me, I said, you know, I guess I'm an alcoholic because I'm here, but I didn't know what was going on, and apparently I was doing a little shaking too, and whatever, and anyway, that guy was shot, and he was sitting right across from me, and he was just so calm and whatever. And I said, and Scott knows that too. And I said, if I someday can look as calm as that guy feels, I want some of that. And you know, it is a program of attraction. It truly is, and that was an attraction to me, and I wanted some of that, and you know. Did I get it right away? Oh, no, because it takes time. This is a process, really. There's some young faces here, you know, that's fine. And you're welcome. I mean, we want you here. But in the same token, you got to remember, this is a process. It takes time. You know, I've been sober since the 24th of July, 1981. And that's been quite a while. But in the same token, I'm still learning. Joe, a guy we know down in Florida, we've been going down there for 20 years, I guess. But anyway, I had to learn to listen And now I listen to learn. Because I learn something every day. Every day I go to a meeting, I've learned something. You know, whatever it might be. Something that has been in the back of my head, and you know, and I, you know. Because I've got one of these, I couldn't think of it the other day when I was at a meeting. And I couldn't think of the coyote. The coyote, you know. Well, got home and I was mentioned it to Joanne. She said, "Oh, you mean the road runner?" You know? And that's what my brain is. I don't know if this registers with anybody or not. But it's beep, beep, and I'm over there. And then beep, beep, and I'm over here. And it just goes like this all day long. It does, you know. Now, I kind of noticed there's a few heads bobbing. Yeah, you know, that's good. That's good. Because it's true. It is true. I got a real busy mind. I do. And that's okay. It's been busy forever, and it probably will stay busy forever. And that's okay. So, anyway, I finally admitted that I was powerless over alcohol. I knew that, and most of us kind of know that deep down in our guts. You know, there's something wrong here. We kind of know it, you know. But I did not see that my life had become unmanageable. I didn't see that for a long time. I did not see that. I mean, good Lord, my first wife went to work one day and never came back. And I had 5 kids to raise, and oh my God, you know? And so the beep beep was, oh, she's out with somebody, and the beep beep was, oh, I got these kids to raise, a beep beep, it was terrible. It was an awful mess, it really was. But anyway, so I didn't see the unmanageability. I really didn't. And because I never got fired from a job. I never got picked up. I never got anything like that. Never was arrested. Anything like that. But as we go along, we find out lots of things. Lots and lots of things. And one of them was, I asked, by the grace of God again, I taught group dynamics for 25 years and for Southwest Tech. And that was for the people who got picked up for drunken driving. And so, you know, today, I've seen a guy that had in class. And was it, what day was it? Last Saturday, another guy was in class. And he said, "Oh, hey." I said, "Well, you know me?" And I said, "Hi, sir." And you know, I can't remember everybody. And but anyway, they said, "Oh, you know, saved my life." You know, that's unreal. It truly is unreal. But anyway, getting back to that, wherever I was, about my unmanageability, it finally dawned on me that most people do not climb box elder trees when the sheriff's looking for them. They just don't do that. Average people don't do that. I did that. And then this, you know, I'm saying, okay, my life is pretty unmanageable. I got ticked off when they said insanity. I thought, no, I'm insane. Come on, you know. Because I've been doing everything right to the best of my ability. And anyway, you know, I didn't like that. But then I came to believe. I came to. Our brains are not going to accept what we hear for a long time. At least mine didn't. But it took time for me to listen. And I, honest to God, I cannot argue with watching somebody kind of grow up right in front of you. I sit across the table from people that are shaking and baking, and the next thing they're sitting there pretty straight. The next thing they know, they're smiling, and the next thing you know, they got a job. Now, how am I going to argue with that? I can't argue with that. It's obvious. It works, you know. But then, you know, the whole thing is, you know, one of the reasons you cannot tell an alcoholic anything is the fact that I kind of believe that most of us have ADD. And that is not attention deficit disorder. It's an authority defiance disorder. You tell me I've got to do something, my brain will automatically go, nope, I could, well, we can do it easier than that. You know, it'll do it automatically. But I know that today, and so I can say, oh, there goes His Majesty the baby again, and he'll, you know, but this too shall pass. It'll go. It will, too, eventually. But anyway, to get back to a little bit of, you know, I didn't know my life was unmanageable, and I thought I was doing so good. I never got fired, and I never got picked up, never got thrown in jail. And so, I mean, I'm a pretty good dude here, you know. And so we had a class at the city police station, and one of the cops was upstairs, and I'd let the class went out to have cigarettes or whatever. So I talked with Paul Hilton is his name, and I looked him right in the eye and I said, "How come you didn't arrest me?" You know what he said? "What the hell are we going to do with your kids, Sherman?" That really knocked me down. I mean, I was like, oh boy. My ego just dropped a whole octave or so right there. You know, it really did. And so, you know, that's the process we have to go through. You know, more will be revealed, and it says that in the book, and it actually does that as we go along. So, anyway, I didn't do anything with step three. Step two, I could see what's happening, so I thought, well, it's got to be true. There's some power. It's doing something. And then this one, in three, I didn't do step three for 8 months because of my authority defiance disorder. They said, you got to do this. You got to do this. Didn't work. My brain said, no, you don't have to do that. And that's the truth. That's the way it was for me. Well then, in the 24-hour day book, on March 5th, that was 1982, and I read that, and it says, you know, you've made a mess out of your life, so why don't you ask God to take over? And that's what I did. And here's the really sad part of that is, I was alone in a trailer. And by God, I had to look around to make sure nobody could see me. I mean, isn't that pretty sick? It really is. But I did it. That's the way it was. And I have to be honest and tell you what's going on, because that's exactly what's going on. And so I did that. And then, of course, you know, and I have to thank Joanne too. When I was in APEC, I had to write down five things that were good about me. Nothing. I could not think of anything. And with her help, she said, "Well, you know, gee, you've been raising you did pretty good with the kids, and you know, and so on." Well, and so I started talking a little bit about that kind of stuff. And anyway, it ended up that then I had to do 10. But it, you know, when alcohol is a depressant. And well, okay, I'm from the old school, and we got to talk about alcohol. But I do believe in my heart of hearts that a drug is a drug is a drug. You know what I mean? We have to talk about alcohol here because this is an AA function. I go to some NA meetings too now. I do. Because I need to hear what happens to other people, you know, for my own benefit. And so on. So, anyway, I didn't want to do any of that stuff, but I did, and I looked around and made sure nobody seen me. And I can honestly say that, did it change overnight? No, not really. But as I look back on that, it got better. A little bit at a time, it got a little better and a little better and a little better. You know? And isn't that what, you know? Don't we want to feel good? I think that's the answer, is feeling good. Well, I tried to use whatever I could to make me feel good, and the more I tried to make me feel good, the worse I felt. That's just a paradox, isn't it? It's just backwards, you know? And so, you want to know what makes you feel good? Go to a jail meeting sometime and sit there and talk with these people and then just be able to walk out and thank God you're able to walk out. That's when you start to feel good. But anyway, that's what we've been trying to be helpful as long as we can. But anyway, that searching and fearless moral inventory, and I'm sorry, but I really thought it was an immoral inventory, and that's what I did for a long time. I really did. I could think of everything that I had done that was so bad. And until I went to a priest, I went to two priests, and one minister and whatever, and we talked about all this stuff. It didn't work. It didn't work. I didn't feel any better until I talked to another alcoholic. And that other alcoholic told me, well, I've done that. I mean, that's nothing, you know. And so we need people who understand us. Because that old saying is that for those who understand, no explanation is needed. We don't need to tell you people anything because you know, you've been there. For those who don't understand, you can talk till you're blue in the face and nothing's going to happen. Not a thing. And that's the truth. I mean, we've been around a while and, you know, we want to be helpful and so on. And boy, the longer I'm around, the less I know. And I just shut your mouth to Sherman and let them do whatever they got to do. And it's hard sometimes. We had a fairly new lady today, and she was crying, and she was, and you have empathy, but you can't do anything. You have to let her learn her own lessons, and that's a tough one around here. Each one of you are going to have to learn your own lesson. We can tell you my experience, strength, and hope, and that's all. That's all. But we aren't going to tell you a damn thing because you know why? Because that would be cheating, wouldn't it? If you'd listen to pay attention to everything I did, you're all different, you know. So you all got to experience your own thing. And that's a blessing. It really is, you know. So anyway, it was an immoral. And finally I started to see this. It's a moral inventory and whatever. So, we went along pretty well, you know. And it's very hard to, it's easy to admit to God, to ourselves, but that other human being is a tough one. I mean, that is really tough. Because, why? It's because of my ego and my pride. I don't want anybody to know too much about me. And that's sad. It is sad. Today I'm struggling, but I still have. I'm a kind of an open book today. I mean, I am. I just say, hey, okay, if you accept me, fine. If you don't accept me, that's your problem. It ain't mine, you know. And that really is helpful. It truly is to be able to to live life on life terms, you know, and whatever. So anyway, I was ready for quite a while to have God remove all these defects of character, and there's so many of them. Jealousy and anger and oh my, it goes on and on and on, and whatever. And so that took a while. I'm not going to say this all came real fast. And so now we'll get back to the Roadrunner, humbly asking to remove our shortcomings. Well, I've been around a while, and it's been a couple of years ago now, I think, that it dawned on me. I still got that beep beep I'm here and beep beep I'm there, but you know what I did? I didn't humbly ask Him to remove them shortcomings. And you know, I would sit down and try to meditate, and back and forth and bouncing around and whatever, until I stopped and said, "Dear God, slow me down. I don't know what to do with this thing." And all of a sudden, I can actually stop now for a while. don't let me run it for too long, because then it'll start in again. But in the same token, that is exactly what I had to do. Now, if we humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings, I humbly ask Him to help me in this fellowship. To help me, okay? Well, this sick soul didn't want to accept the fact that I still got to ask Him. I've got to ask Him for all my defects of character. Doesn't make any difference which ones you have or don't have or whatever. It's the truth, you know? And we can't... Thank God it says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Because this is a we program. You want to try it on your own, go have fun. Just have fun. Because, you know, I know. It's so sad. We go into the jail and, you know, "Well, I'm leaving, and I'm going, oh, yeah. Well, we'll see you down at the meeting. Yeah, oh, yeah." Next, you know, a month later, they're back in jail. Yeah. So, it is serious business we're doing here, too. Very serious. You know, we're not a glum lot. We can smile and laugh and whatever, but deep down in, we know this is deadly. It's deadly. And if you don't want to take it serious, you know, Joanne and I have helped bury a hell of a lot of people over the years, and I hate it. I don't like it. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do? So anyway, that He helps if I humbly ask Him to remove my shortcomings, that'll work. That will work. Now, we made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Well, the whole thing with that is I didn't make amends to me. I needed to make amends to me before I could make amends to anybody else. I'm a sick individual. I have a disease called alcoholism, and it damn near killed me. Okay? It really did. And so now, okay, I had to forgive myself so that I could go on from there. And I did. I feel forgiven in my heart of hearts. I made a mess out of my life, but that's okay, because I learned from all my mistakes. And I keep on learning. And I'm going to keep on learning. And then, so, here's the ironic part of this. That, you know, I became willing to make amends to all of them. And I did for my kids. I apologized to them, you know, and whatever. And I got to tell you this little story, too, because I was 11 years sober. And I didn't feel right. I felt rotten. I, you know, just restless, irritable, and discontented? That crazy feeling that nobody likes? Well, anyway, I went to further counseling. And I found out some things about my childhood and whatever. Nothing bad at all. My brother, he died of cancer, but anyway, he was 9 years older than me, my sister is 5 years older than me, and then I came along. And I didn't, you know, and it's immaterial, but you really need to look at your family position too, because it has it's a factor in my behavior. Not that I did anything really bad or anything like that, but what it was is my dad and my sister were the pair, and my mother and my brother were the pair, and I came along and I didn't really fit. All of a sudden I'm going, maybe that's why I feel this way. And it was really kind of true. And so then the guy told me, well, you better go to Al-Anon. Because he said, you're hung up on them kids. So I went to Al-Anon. And, one time I was in a meeting, it was up here. And anyway, this lady said, how old are your kids, Sherman? I looked at her kind of funny, and she said, well, you remember, they're a gift from God. So she said, now go on, give them back to God and go on with your life. Oh boy, you know. Well, I'm an extremist too. So when I got home, I took down all the pictures and everything. You know. Well, we can laugh about it, but when I think about it, I go, oh, Jesus, I was pretty sick. But anyway, and I went and I told all my kids, I love you so much, I got to let you have it, your own life. I really do. And sometimes it hurts because they are living their own lives and they kind of forget about dad and whatever, but that's just the way it is. But anyway, that was part of that process of making amends to the kids and whatever. But then as life goes on, it's a year ago, I guess. And I got to tell this little story. When I was in treatment, I called my boss and I said, do I have my job? That's all I heard. Dead silence. Dead silence. And it was like, oh my God, now what am I going to do? And by the grace of the God of my understanding, I'd been to quite a few meetings at 5-11 and all over. Somewhere along the way, I heard someone say something about cancer. So I said to my boss, I said, Dean, if I had cancer, would I have my job? And he said, well, of course you would. And I said, well, I've got cancer. And it's cancer in the bottle. And how true that one is. That was true. That's very true. And anyway, so Dean and I became real good friends. I don't know how, you know. So I went back. I quit once, and I went back again and worked for him, and so on. We really did well. We got along. I made amends to him. I thanked him and everything else. But then, as this thing goes along, you know, I never got fired. Well, one day I'm going along, and I'm thinking, that man was a real Christian. Real Christian, because it wasn't about firing me, he was concerned about my kids, and that hit me like a ton of bricks. All of a sudden I went, that's why I never got fired, that's why, here's my ego and pride and everything telling me all of these wonderful things, that, well, I never got picked up or whatever. And then when a cop says, what the hell were you supposed to do with your kids? And then you realize the only reason you didn't get fired was because the man was a true Christian. He was more concerned about my kids. If I wouldn't have had any kids, I would have been gone, you know. Because I didn't. I was late at work and all kinds of stuff, you know. So that's the kind of thing that... Well, when you get through this stuff, and it's hard, nobody's going to say... Because I say this quite often, this fellowship is not for sissies. You got to stand up and take your own message. Whatever you've done, you're responsible, and I'm responsible today. I really try to be responsible, and I have a sponsor down in. Well, I start way back. I always said to everybody, "Oh, Scott's my sponsor." Shit, I never called him once. You know, but boy, I look good today. My ego is out of kilter. But anyway, I had a sponsor down in Florida, and anyway, he says, you got to keep trying. And just keep trying. And then I heard this morning, I listened quite a bit to Joyce Myers, and what time is it? My... Anyway, she was talking with this other minister and whatever, and he said, and he mentioned the 12-step program. He really did, and I went, "Whoa, what's this all about?" So I started listening, and he said, "What you really have to do," he said, "anybody can try." You know, you can try on your own to stop drinking. You're not going to have much success. Okay. So what we have to do is re-educate this thing. And when does that happen? I don't know when I crossed over that imaginary line and I had to have alcohol. Oh my God. I that was awful. I mean, Joanne was managing apartments in Middleton, and I was so sick and whatever, and I had to have alcohol to get started, and if I drank it straight, I'd throw up and so on. So I ended up Irish coffee, and of course I'm in there, and shaking, you know, and I got to go to work, drive all the way to Dodge. You talk about insanity. I talked about that once, but I drove a gas truck for 28 years, gas and fuel oil. And guess what? There was a time when I had a half pint of vodka under the front seat, driving around with dynamite, full load of gas, and I did that stuff. Am I proud of this? Come on. You got to be kidding. I'm not. I'm very ashamed of some of the things that I've done. But in the same token, I can't help that because I'm an alcoholic. You know, don't beat yourself up anymore. We got a little bat down there, a little sponge bat down at the clubhouse, you know. And it's for those who want to beat themselves up. Because that's what alcohol does. Beats the pants off you. It really does. And none of us, did any one of us in here when we were 5, 6 years old or a little smaller, did anyone, when they said, what are you going to be when you grow up? Did any one of us say we're going to be an alcoholic? I don't think so. I don't think so. But I can't help that I have this disease of more. I can't help that. So now what am I going to do about it? What am I going to do? Either you do something about it, or it'll kill you. Pretty simple. If you're good. So anyway, we made some direct amends, and getting back to my boss, he passed away. And by the grace of God, I went out to see him the night before he passed away, the afternoon, and He always called me Sarge because I did spend 23 years in the military too as an active Army reservist. And so as I was always Sarge, you know. And I walked in and he said, "Hi, Sarge." And I talked with him a long time. And anyway, that night he passed away. And so, you know, I'm saying, by the grace of God, I got there and I did this. And you know, that is not a coincidence. That's not a coincidence. That is a God-given a thing that happened, you know. And you, I don't know about anybody else, but I know a little guy back home. And I called him one day. And he talked, you know, everything's fine. About 2 months later, we were sitting at a meeting and he said, "Well," he said, "you know," he said, "I've been having some problems and so on." But he said, "I got a phone call one day and I had a fifth of vodka sitting right on the table." And he said, "That phone rang and I talked to his chair for a while." And he said, "I poured it down the drain." So you see, when you get a feeling that maybe you ought to call somebody, just kind of just do it and see what happens. And you will be amazed. You really will. Because there's a lot of karma that goes around in these rooms. There really is. And so, you know, that's, if you have an idea, well, maybe I ought to call that guy. I haven't seen him for a while. Maybe give him a call. See what happens. So anyway, last year, I think it was, yeah, I'd wake up at night and I'd be thinking about, you know, how really good the Thomases had been to me and whatever. And so I thought, well, wait a minute now. I'm sure Dean and his wife had talked about me quite often. So I went to her place and we talked. And I apologized. I said, you know, I really didn't know that I was causing that much havoc in your lives, you know, and whatever. And so we talked, and I did my amends as best I could, and whatever. And guess what happens when you do these things and face up to what you gotta do? When I went to leave, she said, "Would you give me a hug, Sherman?" You see what I'm getting at? So here, all of these, all the damage I've done and whatever, hey, you can make amends. You can actually make amends. And is it going to hurt you? If you get your pride and your ego out of the road, then it gets a lot easier. It just gets a lot easier. It really does. And so, you know, I didn't ask to have it, but I got it. So now, what am I going to do about it? Well, I think it says something about I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to always be there. And by the grace of the God of my understanding, that's what Joanne and I do. We do. I mean, we're involved. We are involved. We do jail meetings. We go to meetings all the time. Do I need meetings? Well, of course I need meetings, because left to my own devices, I'll go off the deep end again. I know that of me. And so, try it. If you don't believe what I'm saying, don't let the door hit you in the butt, because you'll be back. You know, either you'll be back or dead, one of the two. And we don't want that, of course. But so, take responsibility for yourself. And that was the hard one. I have got to re-educate this thing. I have to re-educate it. And remember, I said something about I had to learn to listen, and now I listen to learn. I mean, I learn something all the time. I do. you know. And somewhere in the big book, I don't know just what page it is, 551, I think. And that's another one. So I can say 551 in the big book. But you know something? Nobody gives a damn how much you know, as long as they care, as long as they know that you care. That is the, that one hit me here quite a while ago now, but oh my God. No, I can say on top of page 20 and 45, and I mean that's easy. But that's not it. You got people got to know that you honestly got to do care. And when that happens, it's amazing what goes on. You know, we get calls all the time. And I don't know what time, 7:30 it starts in the morning. but that's okay. You know, it's I have got to give freely what was so freely given to me. I have got to do that. But anyway, it says then, I think it's on 551. It's in that neighborhood anyway. AA has taught me serenity of purpose. And that's really the truth. And a life without a purpose is not very meaningful, is it? Not very meaningful. Every one of us have got to have a purpose, or else what's the use to be here? You know what I mean? And today, honest to God, I have a purpose. Whether it be going to a jail meeting or calling, if somebody calls and talking, you know, it's the purpose. It's amazing. You know, and I don't know everything. Good Lord. But if I've learned to listen, I really have learned to listen. And let somebody, most people can talk themselves into their own answer. And you know, I see some heads shaking that have been around a while. And it's true. It really is true. Most of us have the answer, but we don't know it. We don't know it because of that beep, 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 beep. That's the reason. And after a while, you know, when you get it slowed down a bit, why, you can actually kind of, you know. I strive for progress, and that's the most beautiful sentence in the whole big book. I strive for progress rather than perfection. I'm never going to be perfect at anything I do, but I'm sure trying to re-educate this thing so it does better. And I think that's about all I got to say. I thank you so much for listening, and that's all I can say. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir.